I guess maybe that's what I feel that you and Ashley have borne out over time, mm-hmm. is the readiness to be humiliated regularly. And the only path to humility that I can think of is through humiliation, because I think humiliation is when you when you become more humble than you were yesterday. So I guess I guess maybe we're not looking for exceptionally humble people. Maybe we're looking for people who are exceptionally willing to be humiliated.
Speaking of going, you're listening to Speaking of Going, a podcast about life, friendship, our hope, and how Christ's love compels us to go to forgotten communities around the globe. And because we've experienced Christ's love, we cannot help but speak about what we have seen and heard. Hello, you're listening to Speaking of Going. My name is Ben, or Ban, depending on where you live in this lovely country. Once a skeptical missionary. No, I should say I was skeptical of the global work. Now, much less skeptical of the value of missions. And I got my good friend Randy here.
You know, I have to say that the whole Ben or Ben thing hasn't really been, it hasn't really sunk in with me. But after I visited
Doesn't resonate.
You, after I visited with you, your son explained it to me.
Yeah.
It's like a pin or a pen. You know, you stick a pin in something.
Pin.
Or you write with a pen. So you have a pin or
it's
a pen. And he said, pin or pin.
It's the same thing.
So you
see, same word.
Bin, B-I-N, apparently in your hometown, Bin is like a pin. And in my hometown, Ben is like a pen. That was, I got it. I got
and
it
in my
now.
Mind, bin is like a trash bin. So
there you go. All right. And I'm Randy or Randall, depending on where you're at in the world. And I was formerly an atheist, and now I'm a leader of a little band of cross-cultural workers called SIM USA. So this season, this little season we're in here of COVID, so this week at my office here, for the first time that I know of, I had someone roaming around who tested positive 2 days later.
Mm-hmm.
You can imagine the level of nerves that happen about that. So far as I know, it hasn't spread at all. But that was that was our brush with COVID here this week. How about you? You have any recent brushes with COVID?
Yeah, there was a similar run in with our kids. They were exposed to someone who was positive in our church. But so far, it's not spread rampantly. Everybody's kind of clamped down. Super interesting. For sure, we developed like these cold-like symptoms at the same time, and according to the test, it's negative. But we're staying away from people. That's why I'm in a van right now, which makes for a great little podcast studio.
So this week the interview with Bethany has been bouncing around in my head a little bit. Last week's interview with Bethany, and for you, what things have been bouncing around in your head after that interview?
Yeah, I was really encouraged by someone who admitted pretty consistently that she needed other people, and the way she told the story, or at least her, you know, bouts with different groups and different communities, it gave me the impression that that she was okay with people pouring into her. Potentially, we didn't dive too far into it with her, but like telling her things she needed to hear. So like there was this humble acceptance. And then at the same time, that transitioned to her letting go of these walls. So she kind of opened herself up to others and then realized, I need this in my next stage. It was almost like at every stage, she was very aware of her need for others. In a community. So I just found that posture really neat. I don't know. I don't necessarily, like, I have an idea of community in my mind where it's this Christ-like community where we give and we serve others and we admit our faults to others and we depend on others. And it's in my mind, but in practice, it's really easy to close yourself off to people and to not let them in. And so that's, yeah, it's something that's much easier to talk about and less easy to actually practice with people.
I'm just, as I'm thinking through her story and what you just said, there's a little bit like an ecosystem of need. Like I think back to her going to college, right? And so she needed people who would show community and the goodness of Jesus to her.
Yeah.
And that community needed somebody to come in with a breath of fresh air and who needed to hear. And so there's sort of, in some ways, God arranged that one person's need feeds the other person's need.
Yeah. And I find that attitude of, like, she probably didn't know she needed this until she saw it. And that at that point, like, there's this choice. It's like, now I know I need this. Do I choose to continue on as if I don't need it? Or do I choose right now to say, you know what? I need this, and this is where I'm going now. Hmm. And so it felt like to me she just had a cool posture there. God was really working in her, changing her heart, I guess, with people and interactions. And even that relationship, I'll be honest, I might not have continued in a community with people through like an ex-girlfriend, in my case, with her ex-boyfriend. I think that was especially humbling, I think.
Hmm. I'm not sure how much it came across in the audio interview, but when you look at her and see her talking, you get, there's just something about the overall presence that says, this is not a lazy person.
No.
That,
I
mean, it's like, I have the impression that although has these strong needs, she also has a strong desire to give, whether it's to give to the 8th grade students that she's trying to teach, or give to her church community, or to give to the community that she served in Japan at the school. We should be,
definitely, I guess, the negative connotation of needy, she doesn't seem to have that. She's,
there have been people in my life that are sort of, I would say that no matter how much they receive, they need more.
Yeah.
And they don't really have this compulsion to give.
Yeah.
But in her case, it felt like there was unmet need that opened up relationship, that gave her a place in community, that God was using her unmet need as one way of guiding her.
Yeah.
Maybe even more than her strength.
Yeah. So Yeah, that's been pushing me for the past week or so, just thinking about it and how I interact with people, my friends. Am I coming in with a posture to where I need them? What about you? What really struck you about it?
I mean, she made this statement at the end. I wish I could quote it now. I probably should have prepared for this, but at the end she made some kind of a quote that said, when I'm weak, God is shown to be strong.
Yeah.
That was her. Like that. I think that's how
when I'm weak, he is strong, I think. Yeah.
And so that was the thing that it just kept hitting me about that. And I went to the scriptures and I sort of I started off thinking about the story of Jesus sending out the 72 as lambs amongst wolves, and that, you know, lambs are pretty weak. It didn't feel like that was quite the message that I was getting there. And then I opened up to 1 Corinthians 1, and I came and I was reading over it, and I thought, just the message here just feels like it's Bethany's story. And so I came to this one particular place, this one verse. Hopefully nobody opens their Bible now, because I want to start off just asking you a question here. It says, so that no human being might boast in the presence of God. And then I got to thinking about, like, I'm going to picture myself as God. And then I thought, well, that's probably not good. So so instead, I'm going to picture myself as a teacher with a bunch of high school students.
Okay.
And suppose my motive, I wanted to do something so that no student could boast in the presence of Randy. That's what I want to achieve.
Yeah.
I want to achieve a reality where no student can boast in the presence of Dr. Fairman.
Yeah.
So what am I going to do?
You want the right answer or the wrong answer?
I want what comes to mind. Natural.
Oh my gosh. Is to be a little bit better than them, so that they might see, you know what, they are not like that.
Yeah, I could use some big words, right? I could use some big words that they don't understand.
Big words, talk fast, make them catch up. They're always behind.
I could go to the gym and work out a lot so that I had some broad shoulders and some big pipes.
Sure.
Powerful. I could show them my wisdom and my intelligence and my power and do everything I could to make them feel small compared to me.
Yeah.
And then I figure they might boast when I'm not around, but they would not boast in the presence of Dr. Fairman. That's my thought.
Yep. I think it would work.
Yeah. So in God's case.
In God's case.
He chose, well, I mean, he chose like a different path.
Yeah, he became nothing and weak. I mean, it's weird because he is powerful. Like he is in charge of the sea and the storm, right? Like he's over everything.
I guess,
and at the same time, he's crucified on a cross.
I guess maybe he's done it more than a few ways, right? I mean, I think of, I remember one time being on a train from my house to MIT reading the book of Job. And I came to the part where God says, okay, put on your big boy panties and listen now, Job, because I'm going to ask, where were you when I did this? Where were you? And I just remember sitting there kind of afraid, in awe of God, and crying. That there was a... So there is a sense that at times he... you get people like Job and his friends that think they can boast in the presence of God, and he comes out with his power and his wisdom and his might. So I don't want to say that he wouldn't do that, because I feel like he did do that.
Yeah, that's true.
But then in this case, it says, God chose what is foolish in the world to shame the wise. God chose what's weak in the world to shame the strong. God chose what is low and despised in the world, even things that are not, to bring to nothing things that are, so that no human might boast in the presence of God. So now I'm thinking of Randy and his students. What does Dr. Fairman do to prevent his students from boasting in my presence? So just what I've been pondering a little bit, and I don't know, I haven't quite come to terms with this, is what God is meaning here or not, but if I wanted to impress them with me, then maybe I would use big words and my power. But if I wanted to prevent them from boasting compared to each other, then maybe I would lift up the one that is not as smart as, that's not as intellectual but works hard.
Yeah.
As the model, and give them an A because their heart and their efforts were sound, and maybe give a C to the one that scored a better grade but didn't have a right attitude. And
you'd have to have a different measurement, of course, and you would tell them this in the in there. What is the thing called, the syllabus? Yeah. The syllabi.
Maybe I wouldn't. Maybe that's part of how I would prevent them from boasting.
Maybe they don't know.
Maybe they would have to learn. Maybe they'd have to figure it out. And they're like, man, how does this guy that I think is so stupid keep getting better grades from me?
For me, since we're talking about school here, I was, it made me feel better when I was in like some sort of group, and where I had to come, I couldn't come up with this, whatever this process was. I had to depend on someone else. For most people hate group projects because someone's in charge of like something super important and their grade depends on that other person. But it is a bit less difficult to boast in yourself when you're having to depend on someone else for part of like a group project or something. I'm sure you would come up with that in your class.
Yeah. So God, it says here in verse 27 and 28. God chose what's foolish in the world to shame the wise. And God chose what's weak in the world to shame the strong. And God chose what's low and despised in the world, even things that don't exist, even things that are not, to bring to nothing things that are. So what I'm thinking is, I remember as an atheist, I believed that we would just die and rot, that was the end, mm-hmm. right? And so then I would look at people who were handicapped, and I would have a hard time seeing their value. That somebody who wasn't as smart as me, matter of fact, they weren't even smart enough to really interact with me, or mm-hmm. or somebody who was in prison, right? They've done something evil in the past, yeah. and now they're in prison. Clearly they got nothing on me. That there was a sense of those things. And nowadays, if I'm honest, in my spirit somehow, I know that God does not value my ability to read and memorize the scriptures more than mm-hmm. that doesn't make me somehow better than the handicapped person that can't even read. Mm-hmm. That's going to live their whole 27 years
yeah.
or 28 years. And for whatever reason, they don't have the same capacity as I have, and I don't have the same capacity as Dr. Feynman, whoever, whatever. So I believe
mm-hmm.
that the capacity that I have for strength and wisdom and power is not like a secret sauce to pleasing God. I think I believe it.
Hmm. Yeah, I think it's especially hard for people, at least me. I mean, out of college, I went into like a ministry leader position, and I felt like I was viewed by a lot of people as the person who was good just because of like the position. I mean, to break it down and make it really simple, like to me, it was a people expect me to be this spiritually wise and good person. Because of the position. And then that's just really easy to walk around if you're constantly being affirmed that, you know, you're in this position of teaching others about God, that you must be closer to God. You must be doing all the right things. Yeah. And when you're constantly affirmed in that, you can start to believe that this is... This is how you approach God. This is the posture that you just do more of these good things.
I remember one of your pastors when you were doing that youth pastor gig. I remember one of them. they came to Central Asia to hang out with me for
mm-hmm.
10 days, and then I remember coming back to your group there. I can imagine that at some point, you and Ashley were more or less singled out and asked mm-hmm. to go. It wasn't so much that you said, here I am, choose me,
yeah.
as much as they singled out and asked if you were willing. I can imagine yeah. that there might have been temptations towards pride for being chosen at some points.
Yeah, I mean, and I think this is part of our church that sent us, how they've grown as well. But and I wouldn't say that this is like, I don't want to like down this guy, but one of our elders, pastors, he came and said, you know, we're sending the best of the best. And at the time it felt right. Like it felt, yeah, this is it. And I think our church has been humbled as like a group over time. Like, wow. It wasn't about what we go and accomplish. That's just something we've had to grow in our faith and our expectations of what it's like to do cross-cultural work together. But I remember taking those words, and he probably just said them to encourage me, to be honest, like to make sure I don't feel like I'm nothing and worthless. And he wanted to give me value in some way, but I think I took those words in such a manner that I thought that I have to go here as this expert to not just teach people about Jesus, but to be the person that knows the right way of how to be like Jesus, and this is a great accomplishment that I can have, is to do all these things, you name it, with cross-cultural work, to be the guy that people write books about. And so it's such a tempting thing, and I don't think his heart was wrong in it or anything. I just think that that was something as a way that I needed to grow for sure. Took a while.
So for what it's worth, I agree with him that they were sending the best of the best. But when you heard best of the best, what you were hearing was strongest of the strong.
Yeah.
Because in your mind, strong, intellectual, wise, discerning, those qualities are what make a person the best. And I was actually talking with a couple. He's an engineer and she's a used to be a naval officer. Just dear, lovely friends, and I was telling them that I felt like of all the people I know, that I feel like probably they should take the next step. And they said, Randy, can you just tell us what it is about us that makes you say that? And I wasn't really ready to answer that question because I hadn't really done an objective analysis. It was more of a gut thing. But at that point, I realized that they're just exceptional in the characteristic that I think is most critical for any worker.
What's that?
Humility. Exceptionally humble. I think that's, if I was going to say, what do? We go out and we find between 40 and 100 exceptionally humble people every year, and we prepare them to go take on the task of considering others better than themselves, of learning a new way. And so exceptional humility is sort of the number one characteristic. And so I would find that you and Ashley and the kids came with exceptional humility and you didn't know it. And then
I didn't know it. It didn't feel humble. I'm wondering though, because that's an interesting exceptional humility. Like if I'm trying to rethink what I was actually thinking in my heart state when I was originally going in, I would say it was not exceptionally humble, but willing to be humiliated. Like I don't have like a phrase for it. To you, maybe you saw that I was accepting of, something I needed to change.
That's
for me. I don't know that. I don't know. Like I wouldn't have labeled myself. And this is just hindsight. I mean, at the time, I would have told people I was exceptionally humble. But like now, I don't know that I would label myself as that.
It's interesting. I the more I think of it, when Jesus was in heaven, he was like right there with the Father. He created the universe, right? Nothing that was created was created except through him. And so I don't know if you can describe him as humble at that point or not. I'm just not sure. I haven't pondered it. But I do know that he was humiliated, and that he described himself later as humble and lowly. And so there was a humiliation process. So maybe he had a willingness to be humiliated. Maybe he had, but I guess maybe that's what I feel that you and Ashley have borne out over time, is the readiness to be humiliated regularly. And the only path to humility that I can think of is through humiliation, because I think humiliation is when you when you become more humble than you were yesterday. So I guess maybe we're not looking for exceptionally humble people. Maybe we're looking for people who are exceptionally willing to be humiliated.
Yeah,
I guess actually when I think of Bethany's story, it really, and your story side by side, what I come to think of is that there's a combination of awareness of need and readiness to work.
Yeah, work in itself is just a willingness to work and labor. It has this element of you could fail at doing it, or you've, like any job that I've done before, it's hard. It's, you come away a little bit dirty, but there's something about the sacrifice in it that feels worshipful. And yeah, that's an interesting characteristic.
So after we talked with Bethany last week, I went back and talked with our SIM Japan country director, because I wanted to get a bit of his take, because I had this question in my mind. Bethany originally went to Japan, not with SIM, to be a teacher at a school. She didn't need to raise financial support. She didn't need to have a prayer team or a sending church. So she went, she worked at that school, and then over time, she came to the point where she felt the need to be more fully engaged in the church, and so she came home to raise, to see if her church would send her as a worker, to see if her family and friends would support her in prayer and finance, and then she was sent out with SIM. So my question for the Japan country director is, do we have a place in SIM for somebody who's in that role of, I currently have finished my first year teaching in eighth grade. I'm a little bit broken right now. Do we have a role in SIM for somebody that's in that previous stage of Bethany that would like to come serve? And he said, yeah, that's actually one of our most urgent needs right now. If there's somebody that's in that earlier stage of Bethany that would like to come and participate in teaching, we would be even be willing to help raise support for them, because we really need that help right now.
Yeah.
So then I asked him, I said, what if you had somebody, let's say they're an engineer, and they've been teaching Sunday school for the last 10 years, but they don't really have a Bible degree. Do you have a place for someone like that? And he said, yeah, our basic, he said their basic model in Japan is that the church is really small. And what they're looking for is Americans who have learned to show the goodness of Jesus in word and deed in America. That aren't expecting a flight across the ocean to somehow make them into a missionary. And that they would be willing to come there. He said an engineer probably wouldn't come here and serve in engineering, but we would put him in an area where the people around him have a similar education and background. And he would serve, tend to serve in a church, in a Japanese church. He didn't say this, but I was sort of like as an associate pastor type role.
Sure.
Where he's helping a church to grow. So I asked him, for that engineer, what would the first 5 years look like? He said the first year, you know, there's just learning to live in Japan is you're in the local church, you're attending the local church, but it's all in Japanese. And so the whole aspect of learning language and culture, it's a beautifully humiliating process that grows relationships. And and he would put the person in a place that he's likely to meet people from their culture that is similar to their American context, where they would have relevant discussions. And most of the people that he would spend time with would be the kind of people that are living in an environment where less than 0.1% of the people are Christian. And he said the second year would continue with language study, and you'd get involved more and more in ministry with the local church as your language ability grew. And then during the third year, you'd basically have a lot of the language you'd continue to learn, but your ministry with your neighbors and your friends, and it just sort of a more traditional assistant in a church, church growth, church planting type model. And then the fourth year would be sort of focusing on finishing the first term of service really well. And a lot of that has to do with, I've made these friends. Maybe I need to ask them whether the time has come for them to make a decision to follow Jesus with their whole heart.
Yeah.
To sort of what Japanese Christian friends and Japanese non-Christian friends do I need to bring together? So during that fourth year, you would take all those relationship networks and you'd ask God, how, now that I'm going home for a home assignment time and to think about what comes next, I want to finish well. I want to help these people have ongoing opportunity to hear about the goodness of Jesus. How will I do that? So
yeah,
that's sort of the view. I asked him afterwards, I said, hey, what about a youth pastor or an accountant? Could they also? And he said, yeah. He said, the thing about it is not so much what their profession is or what they know, but about their mission heart, the tendency that they have to show the goodness of Jesus in everything that they say and everything that they do amongst those that need to hear. And he didn't say it, but I would say the capacity to be, the willingness to be humiliated and sanctified through the language and culture learning process. So that was kind of that's kind of where he landed.
Yeah, I think that's good. I mean, it's all of that is encompassed in some sort of like learner spirit. I'm glad you mentioned all that because I think it's important like to see because people maybe in America have an idea of a missionary or cross-cultural worker, and maybe they have weird expectations and they think that they can't go to this place with maybe the skills or the labor they've put in this country and relationships they've formed. They can't go to this place and that be used, that it gets dropped. And it's a different type of like dropping of identity. It's you, of course, you take the things that have made you who you are. You know, you've been in relationships, you've worked with people, coworkers, you've learned how to be humble and communicate. And maybe you have that skill, but you go to this new place and you're kind of this incarnate Jesus, right, to people who would never meet a Christian. And it's all the little things that you really don't even know that actually reveal the Spirit of God. It's maybe they talk to their coworkers in a demeaning attitude and they have no clue, and they see that you lift others up and they're better than yourself kind of thing, and they see that in your attitude. And so it's, does that make sense? Like,
yeah.
I like what you described, because it's normal people. We're not dropping all the things that God's put in our lives here, and it's not worthless. There's so much value in who we've become here as believers. And
I remember I guess I was about 38 years old when I put in my sort of first consideration with SIM.
Yeah.
And I was focused on my skills.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, I've been a Navy leader for 20 years. I've participated in leading a project with 10,000 people, $1 billion. I've got an MIT PhD. So these were all I have all these ideas, and that would be like the lead of my application. And so what I was expecting to come back was ways that my strength specific could be used. And one really wise guy from the Navigators, actually, he said to me, Randy, most English-speaking people in the world already have a Christian friend. And most of the languages you would need to learn would take 2 or 3 years before you're a functioning member of society. So any job that's available today that's meaningful, that could use your strength, is not going to be available in 2 or 3 years when you're ready to do it.
Interesting.
So you're going to have to take a leap of faith, not based on all of your strength.
Yeah.
But you're going to have to take a leap of faith based on God's ability to use you in your weakness.
Yeah.
And it was just it was a total mind shift for me. Yeah. Because, you know, in the secular world, you don't bury your treasures. You can't, you know, even in the scriptures, right? You can't, I can't take all of these things that have been entrusted to me and just bury them in the ground and never let them be used.
Right.
And that's kind of how it felt when I entered into a language learning process and learned to say with all my skill, I am going to the bazaar. So I think this is only one example. Like, there's lots of examples of how this plays out. Hopefully in future podcasts, we'll get a chance to talk about it. But in Japan in particular, the strategic idea is we have faithful Japanese pastors, and they would find an American individual or family who came to join them in humility, a powerful extension in their ability to reach their country with the gospel, and their country is sorely unreached. And so that's the Japan context.
That's cool. So how do you think God used Bethany's weakness to shame the strong?
Yeah, it's, well, let's just think back to her home church when she was in, I think it was St. Louis. And probably there was people there that had good jobs, and they were confident, and they were spiritual.
Yeah.
And Bethany was working at a job that she didn't feel called to.
Yeah.
She wasn't feeling successful, and ultimately she was fired.
Mm-hmm.
And she was roaming around trying to figure out what comes next. And she was afraid to do an interview because she thought she was really bad at it.
Yeah.
To me, that seems pretty weak.
Yeah.
And then God used that to take her over to the desk that was going to talk about how she was going to get involved in building the church in Japan.
Yeah.
And so essentially, maybe you could say in the heavenlies, there's two people in her church, one that's fictional and one that's her.
Mm-hmm.
The fictional one is very confident. They've got a great job. They're making a good living. They give to the church. They're happy. They're healthy. They got a good family. They got no problems. I would say that's strong. And then you got Bethany that is in her situation.
Yeah.
And who does God choose to go and build the church, build up the church in Japan? He didn't choose the other one. He chose Bethany.
Yeah, so that Bethany might not boast in the presence of God, right? That's pretty cool.
So that neither one of them is going to boast about reaching Japan.
That's right. That's right.
In the presence of God. Maybe you could pray for us.
Yeah. God, thank you for this kingdom ecosystem you've set up here, and you showed us what it's like to become nothing, to be weak, to die on a cross, that we might not ourselves boast in your presence, that we might also become weak, we might consider others better than ourselves, and that we might lay down all that we are before you, so that you can use us and make yourself known to others, and that it's not about us making ourselves known, but it's about you making yourself known, that path is good and it's rewarding, and we have more value in doing that. We find purpose in doing that. So thank you, God, for what you've shown us. Pray these things. Pray for Bethany. Pray for the church in Japan. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
Have you ever considered becoming a cross-cultural worker? Convinced that no one should live and die without hearing God's good news, we believe that He has called us to make disciples of the Lord Jesus Christ in communities where He is least known. Visit us at simusa.org/connect to talk to someone about serving in mission. This has been an SIM USA production.